We're going to go on now to case number two, and that is 133391 Hansen v. Fincantieri Marine Group. And it's Ms. Ribe, do you say, or Reeb?
It's Rib, actually.
Rib?
Yes, Your Honor.
R-E-I-B. Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Attorney Erica Rib from Hines & Minko, and I represent the plaintiff appellant James Hansen in this appeal of his FMLA interference and retaliation claims. This case essentially comes down to whether Mr. Hansen was entitled to FMLA leave on three episodes in July of 2011 on which he requested it. We would request that this Court remand the case for jury trial for two reasons. One, the company was not allowed to categorically deny Mr. Hansen intermittent FMLA leave when he exceeded his doctor's estimate. And second, because Mr. Hansen's incapacitation is a question of fact for the jury on which he does not need expert testimony. Mr. Hansen is entitled to FMLA leave if he has a serious health condition for which and he is incapacitated by that health condition. A healthcare provider needs to find that an employee is incapacitated by a serious health condition at the time for the need for FMLA leave arises. Mr. Hansen's physician's certification establishes both that he had a serious health condition and that he would be incapacitated by it at points.
Ms. Rib,
yes.
What is your best evidence in the record that Mr. Hansen was incapacitated by depression on the days that exceeded the estimate of his doctor? In other words, is there an affidavit? Is there deposition testimony from Hansen himself or from his doctor as a lay witness?
Your Honor, on each and every day that Mr. Hansen was incapacitated by his serious health condition, he called the company's FMLA administrator and stated he was incapacitated. There has been no deposition or affidavit testimony because those were not necessarily the issues we were talking about at summary judgment stage.
Was there any proffer of what the doctor was expected to say as a non-expert witness?
We did not list the doctor as an expert witness, and therefore we would not have him testify as to Mr. Hansen's incapacity on those days. Because the FMLA allows FMLA absences for chronic health conditions even when the employee does not seek leave on those or does not seek treatment on those days, Dr. Post did not see Mr. Hansen on those days and therefore cannot testify as to Mr. Hansen's conditions on those days. Therefore, it would be Mr. Hansen's lay testimony that would need to establish incapacitation as a question of fact for the jury.
Do you believe the initial certificate that Hansen's doctor presented covers the July absences?
I believe that it establishes a serious health condition that will cause incapacitation.
And do you think it covers the July absences?
It does not specifically cover them, but it covers an estimated time. And because an estimate cannot be an exact, specific amount of FMLA leave, it can cover that as well.
Judge Williams brings up a question that I'd like to sort of follow up on, because I did not see in any of the briefs a case directly on point on the question of whether the initial certification is sufficient to make out the plaintiff's prima facie case for FMLA leave, or on the question of whether expert testimony is required to establish incapacity when the frequency, this is convoluted, but of whether when the frequency of absences exceeds the original estimate. So, am I correct if I think that there is no controlling law?
Your Honor, I think you are correct that there is no controlling law. I think that the case that this circuit could look at is Shar versus Lehigh Valley Health Services out of the Third Circuit, in which there was a doctor's note. The plaintiff in that case was trying to establish that she had been incapacitated for three consecutive days thus allowing her to take FMLA leave. The doctor in that case had written her a note that said that she was allowed to take 2 days of FMLA, or she would be incapacitated for 2 days. The court then said that her lay testimony that she had been incapacitated for a third day could be considered by a jury at trial as a question of fact.
Now, you understand that the defendant claims it's a settled issue.
Yes, I am aware of that, Your Honor. However, the cases that, particularly Caskey and Hafling out of this circuit, that have looked at whether or not expert testimony is required, have required it to establish a serious health condition. The regulations do state that a healthcare provider needs to find the employee incapacitated at the beginning of the leave. However, neither Hafling or Caskey reach the question of whether expert testimony is required to find incapacitation. And I believe that the other circuits have all looked at some sort of combination or that simply lay testimony. I don't think that Mr. Hansen's serious health condition should be at dispute here because Mr. Hansen provided the certification under which the company granted him FMLA leave. So they should be a stop from arguing that he doesn't have a serious health condition because they have not sought a second opinion, asked for recertification, or provided any contrary medical evidence that he does not suffer from a serious health condition.
So your position would be that the lay testimony is enough here given the original certification. Because even when the doctor did a second estimate, 6 episodes in 6 months, that was still short of the 10 Hansen incurred in 2 months, right?
Correct, but that was not a proper request for recertification, and we don't actually know what the doctor meant by that, because that was after Mr. Hansen's termination, and we don't know, as the district court noted, whether that was prospective or what information the doctor even had, whether or not he knew about all of the July absences. So I'm stating simply that Mr. Hansen's testimony regarding his incapacitation on those specific days would be a question of fact for the jury.
And would not require expert testimony.
Correct.
Because of the initial finding, the initial diagnosis.
Yes, because the incapacitation regulations do not require or mention a healthcare provider determination, I believe that lay testimony would be enough to establish incapacitation.
Now, if lay testimony were enough, couldn't an employee try to drag an employer through lawsuits like this without any medical support whatsoever?
I believe that medical support is necessary to prove the first prong of entitlement, which is that he suffers from a serious health condition. Those regulations do mention a healthcare provider, but because Mr. Hansen has that, and I believe that the company has waived their argument that he does not have a serious health condition, I do not believe that an expert is required in this situation. The second point that we have argued this on is that the company was not allowed to categorically deny any absences over Mr. Hansen's initial estimate because it is an estimate and is not a there is case law that out of the Eastern District of Michigan, Fritz versus Phillips Services Industries Incorporated, that says that the absence of those additional days doesn't mean it's not a negative inference that those days are not required. I believe that if the company had questions regarding whether or not they, these were appropriate absences, they could have asked for recertification. There are provisions in the FMLA that let them seek this additional information. If additional certification was required, they needed to inform Mr. Hansen of that and inform him of the consequences of failing to provide that. I do not believe they did that because the first time that they had informed him that these absences did not qualify was at his termination meeting.
But there's no statutory requirement that the employer seek recertification, only that the employer may seek it in certain circumstances. The burden still remains with the plaintiff.
Correct, and that is why we did not initially file for summary judgment in this matter, because we believe that if Mr. Hansen has to prove that he is entitled to FMLA leave, and that once he proves that, this is another question. If I can reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
You can do anything.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Azir? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
It's Asia, Your Honor.
Of course.
Your Honor, I have yet to meet anyone who has been able to pronounce it correctly, so I blame my ancestors more than anyone who attempts it.
For not knowing how to spell.
Exactly. Or pronunciate the name.
So, Asia.
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 May it please the court. My name is Joel Asia. I'm from the law firm of Belo Vetter, and I represent the defendant appellees in this case, Fincantieri and Marinette Marine Corporation. Your Honors, we're here today to discuss whether the plaintiff is able to establish his entitlement to leave on the days in question, in this case, July of 2011. Now, Your Honor, you asked the question, is there any guidance or definitive word from this court or any court on this subject? I would direct this court to your prior decision in Caskey versus Colgate-Palmolive. If we take a look at that case, the facts are stunningly similar to the case at hand. In Caskey, Caskey suffered from depression and anxiety. She received a medical certification from her doctor for those two disorders. There was no question that she had a serious health condition. There was also no question that she took a number of covered days of leave prior to May 20th. However, after May 20th, she continued to take leave and attributed that leave to her serious health condition. She had no doctor's testimony to demonstrate that those absences were attributed to this serious health condition. And she had no documentation or expert witness testimony at trial. This court took a look at those factors and specifically stated, though she previously received treatment for depression and anxiety, she offered no evidence of incapacity related to her post-May 20th absences. This court then went on to say, quote, Caskey has an obligation to show a serious health condition, and her general testimony that her condition was serious is insufficient to raise a genuine issue of material fact on this issue.
But where is the case or statute or regulation that requires expert medical evidence on the question of incapacity for a particular occasion when an employee suffers from a recurring condition such as depression or migraine?
Again, Your Honor, Caskey. Caskey came in and said, I myself say that I need this leave, and this court said that's not enough. Hafling as well, Your Honor, Hafling versus UPS. In the Hafling case, there was no question that Mr. Hafling suffered a neck injury. He was injured while at work, and he injured his neck and exacerbated a pre-existing condition. In Hafling, he went to see the doctor two times. Following that, he kept a diary in which he attributed times that he was unable to work. He came into court and stated, I have this doctor's note saying that I have this serious health condition, and it was not contested that he had this condition. He then, however, tried to prove his days of incapacity solely using his diary with no documentation from the doctor and no other medical documentation.
But here we have medical certification saying that he suffers from migraines.
And we don't dispute that, Your Honor.
And you recognize that.
Right.
Granting the prior FMLA.
We absolutely do, Your Honor. Your Honor, the plaintiff...
So aren't you estopped from now asserting that it has not been shown to be a serious medical condition?
No, Your Honor, because simply having a serious medical condition is not enough. The plaintiff must demonstrate that that serious medical condition rendered him or her unable to perform the functions of their job on the specific days in question.
Well, but why isn't it enough for the employee to testify that on the day in question he or she experienced an incapacitating instance of her illness? I mean, why not let a jury decide whether she truly had one more often than her or his physician predicted? We do this all the time in the context of Social Security disability and the Americans with Disability Act. We often say that a plaintiff's own testimony regarding subjective symptoms of pain is enough to meet a burden of proof.
But under the regulations of the FMLA, it is not, Your Honor. The FMLA specifically requires a medical certification stating that the individual was unable to perform the functions of the job for a specific period of time. The FMLA certification form, the original form that is filed, must not only identify what the serious health condition is, but also specify the amount of time the individual will need to be away.
And it has to be a specific period of time?
Absolutely,
Your Honor. Why does your form ask for an estimate then?
Your Honor, an estimate, the plaintiff is trying to make this sound like there's something magical or different about intermittent FMLA and regular FMLA. And that simply isn't true. Let's look at the regular FMLA case. An individual goes in and has knee replacement surgery. The doctor who is writing out the FMLA certification form has no idea how long that individual will actually need for his or her leave. The doctor makes an estimate. The doctor bases that estimate on his experience and the amount of training and time he has seen with other patients. The doctor comes out and says this individual needs 8 weeks off. That is an estimate. The individual then is entitled to take 8 weeks off. Once we get into week number 9, the individual is no longer entitled to FMLA leave.
But wait a minute. An estimate is exactly that. It's an estimate. The regulations appear to give the employer a path if the employee exceeds the estimate. I mean, why shouldn't you be held to the procedures in Section 825.308?
Because, Your Honor, those requirements are permissive and not mandatory. The reason that they are permissive is to protect an employer. For example, let's go back to my example where the individual has 8 weeks off. The individual is not doing well based on physical therapy and is not able to return to work under their own subjective belief. The employer at that particular point has the option to ask for recertification, but they have no obligation to do so. If the individual goes to his or her doctor, the doctor says, yes, you need another 2 weeks, and the employer never asks for that recertification, then the employer does that at its own peril. And when the individual comes in and says, here's my evidence from my doctor, the employer is sunk. There's liability. But now assume instead that the individual goes to the doctor and the doctor says there is absolutely no medical reason why you cannot return to work. None. You should go to work. In that particular case, the plaintiff has no cause of action against the employer, and the failure of the employer to ask for the recertification does not create liability where no liability existed.
Here's the difference between your view and what may be my view. I'm not sure anymore. But you seem to believe that certification and recertification are entirely optional. And the way I was reading the statute and the regulations, certifications are optional only in the sense that you may accept the employee's word for the need for FMLA leave, or you may request certification. And what I'm trying to figure out is where in the statute or regulations is there support for the idea that you can ignore the employee, fail to ask for recertification, and then simply fire the employee?
Your Honor, I don't believe that certifications are optional. I believe that if an individual does intend to take FMLA, they must obtain the certification. It is the recertification that is optional, and it is at the option of the employer as to whether they want to ask for that. And the sole reason, and the regs are very clear about this, the sole reason is protection of the employer so that the employee cannot come back after being terminated and say, oh, here's the medical documentation showing that I was entitled to leave.
But when you look at 29 CFR 825.305, it says the employee must provide a complete and sufficient certification to the employer. If it is not complete or sufficient, the employer shall advise an employee who must then submit a proper certificate. So you're not disputing that you didn't advise him when the additional dates were there and say, you need recertification. You're not disputing that.
Correct, Your Honor. There was nothing deficient about the original certification. In fact, the original certification was 100% accurate. Mr. Hansen only needed four incidents within a six-month period.
Well, you know, I have a lot of trouble with the way you phrase that. And,
yes.
And this kind of leads to my biggest aggravation about this case is your request for sanctions. In your brief, page 30, you're talking about Dr. Post's certification. You say that he certified that the plaintiff would suffer at most six incidents in a six-month period. He certified no such thing. He gave an estimate of the number of incidents and the estimated length of time. He did not give a certain figure on the number of days off that Mr. Hansen would need.
Your Honor, the regs are very clear and unequivocal.
The brief does this in several parts.
But the regs are clear that he is only entitled to the amount of leave that is set forth in the medical certification form.
And this and the form here estimated the number of incidents and the length of each and the duration of each.
Yes, Your Honor. And if he needed more time, then he must demonstrate the need for that time. In this particular case, there is no medical...
So had the doctor said at least four incidents of 2 to 5 days in length, then he's covered?
No, Your Honor, because he would have to testify at trial as an expert witness as to what he meant by that statement. And there was no expert witness designated here. The sole reason we are here is because plaintiff failed to designate an expert witness who could testify with regard to what that original estimate meant, and whether Mr. Hansen needed those days of leave in July of 2011.
So following what Judge Tinder said, at least if that had been in the certification, would you have challenged the certification if it said he would have these episodes at least four times every 6 months? Would you have challenged it then?
Absolutely, Your Honor. If he said at least without giving us the specific amount.
But that's what he did. And you didn't challenge it. You kept giving him credit for FMLA leave.
He didn't do that, Your Honor. When he was asked the frequency and duration, he indicated four episodes within a six-month period. It's no different than my example with the knee replacement.
Your question asks for an your question on your form asks for an estimate of the periods off and so forth.
But that still ignores the fact that when we get to trial, an expert has to testify whether those additional days were attributed to a serious health condition.
How do we factor in the fact that Hansen, as I recall, requested 18 days of FMLA leave in 3 months, and Dr. Post's certification allows for up to a total of 20 days?
Dr. Post did not certify a total of 20 days, Your Honor. He certified it in terms of episodes. And the episodes were four episodes within a six-month period. When he came back after the fact and provided the letter, he increased that to six episodes. He never referred to days. He always referred to episodes, understanding that they would happen potentially in clusters and not just one day at a time.
And these episodes were duration of 2 to 5 days per period, which is exactly what happened in July. And the July 1st date was like 4 days after his prior incident had been June 27th, and the next date was July 1.
Correct, Your Honor,
yes. 3 days later.
There were three episodes in 1 month, which is three times what Dr. Post believed would occur when he sent his July 26, 2011 letter. I see I'm out of time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you have anything further, Ms. Ribb? Surely. 3 minutes left.
Your Honor, I believe I already touched on this, but Caskey and Hafling are factually different than the present case. In both of those cases, the court looked at lay testimony and decided that it was not enough to reach the question of whether or not each plaintiff had a serious health condition and could establish that. As we've stated here, that argument has been waived by the company, and we're really only focusing on incapacity, which neither of those decisions focused on. There is, as I believe, a difference between continuous and intermittent leave. Intermittent is not specific. There's typically an end date on continuous FMLA leave. Intermittent is an estimate, There is no case law that says the estimate has to be specific. And I think it's important in this particular case that Mr. Hansen, after he exceeded his initial estimate, was granted days of FMLA leave by the company. They specifically overruled their FMLA administrator. So how Mr. Hansen was supposed to know that this was a cutoff, a dead cutoff, and that he should have sought reefer certification, I'm not entirely clear on. And I would again like to make the point that Mr. Hansen's doctor would not be able to testify about the specific days in July. Mr. Hansen was not required by the regulations to seek treatment on those days for a chronic medical condition, and he didn't. Unless you have any questions, I am done. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks to both parties, and the case will be taken under advisement.